This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for business on BFM
89.9. You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. Hello and welcome to Beyond Performance, where we have candid conversations with high-performing people from all walks of life and distill actionable lessons we can take away to perform a little bit better every single day. I'm your host, Dana Bluen, and today I speak with Eric Prince, a full-time travel journalist and the creative entrepreneur behind Minority Nomad, a blog with the goal of encouraging minority communities to set out and travel the world. Here in the first part, we discuss Eric's background and how he went from being in the U.S. Air Force to a full-time travel journalist and came up with the idea for Minority Nomad. Let's get into it. Eric, man, thank you for taking the time to come by and talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me as usual.
You know, I love what you do, and I want to get into like how you maintain the level you're at. But before we do, I really want to talk to you about what it is you do, because it's a lot. What you do encompasses a lot. So do me a favor. Tell the audience, tell me what it is that you do. What is your business, your job, if you will?
So the umbrella term I like to use is travel journalist.
Okay.
And under journalism, no matter what kind of journalism it is, there's different little branches.
Yeah.
For me, I'm primarily a photographer. Photojournalism has been in my heart since I was a kid. But as my career has gone on, you know, in the past 10 years, I've become a videographer, YouTuber, public speaker, content creator.
You've grown with the market.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, a lot of outlets don't staff people anymore. Mm. They usually go with freelancers. And the more things that you can do, the more hireable you are. So yeah. I cultivated a certain set of skills,
which, if you will,
which have made me quite successful in my career.
Nice. And so you travel not just in Southeast Asia, but all around the world.
All around the world, yes.
And you're based in Southeast Asia. You spend some time in Bangkok, in KL,
yes,
Penang. Mm-hmm. And I know we were talking before the show, you actually haven't been to Penang as much as you
have
previously.
I used to go a lot. To Penang. I was comfortable there. I love the food culture. Some of my close friends are in Penang, but I've actually shifted more towards KL.
Yep.
Because I'm a big city boy, and KL is one of the few places in the world where I can actually get work done.
Yeah.
It's such a calm and laid back place. I always tell people, as a single man, I love living in Bangkok, but if I'm looking to get work done or raise a family, it's going to be KL.
That's one of the things I love about KL as well, is that you have access to a lot of things, and it's a very modern city.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
A lot of opportunity.
Oh, great, great, great.
But from a travel perspective, it's also a great jump off spot.
Yes, you can get to a lot of different places. I've always said that KL has a lot of potential in the travel space, but unfortunately, it's still kind of a flyover. It's a stop through.
A lot of people don't give Malaysia in the travel space the love that it probably deserves.
It's underrated. It really is. It's one of the most underrated travel destinations in the world. But I think part of the problem with Malaysia, for example, is it doesn't need tourism. It doesn't necessarily need it. It's a great accent to the culture and history and the economy there, but they don't need it. So it's not particularly a promoted aspect of the country.
And you happen to be next to probably the most traveled to country in the world. So it's a hard, hard
Thailand, stuff. You're stuck between Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam. The big three who go out of their way to push tourism. And that's why I actually love Malaysia, because the tourism infrastructure is there.
Yeah.
It exists.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't take advantage of it, making it an excellent place for anybody who's looking to explore.
And before we get into a little bit more about what you do, I will say though, also probably the most underrated food game in the world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've told people that everybody raves about Bangkok's street food culture. Yeah. You don't know what you're talking about if KL's not on that list.
I go to KL just for Mamak food.
Oh, 100%.
100%.
Like this last trip, I was there. I was in KL, end of the year. I finished my year in KL for 2 months. I was back. I was there in October. Then I was back for December and January. And I went out of my way to try Malay cuisine, because my Malay friends were getting upset with me because I always ate Indian and Chinese food in KL. So this trip, I actually went out of my way to go just for Malaysian food. And now I'm starting a project later this year where I'll go to each state in Malaysia and decide what my favorite dish is in each state of Malaysia.
I'll tell you, if you're talking coffee, and I don't want to upset
Malaysian people, but Sabah coffee. You go to Sabah, that coffee's off the chain.
We shall see, man. We shall see.
But anyway, you weren't always a journalist, right? You weren't always a travel journalist. You actually were in the military before.
Yep. I was in the U.S. Air Force for 10 and a half years.
10 and a half years, halfway through to retirement, and you decided to step out. Why?
It was I was blessed with a self-awareness. And the military, I just wasn't that person anymore. The first 5 to 6 years, and as a fellow American, you understand this, as kids, we're raised to be soldiers. Like, there's no more prestigious job in the U.S. than a soldier.
Until you are one.
Until you are one. Oh, God. Or I would say the hierarchy would be a soldier, a firefighter, and a policeman.
Yeah.
You know, and policemen.
That, those public service.
The public servants. So I went to the military to take care of my family, to kind of get a leg up on life, because as an African American, that was one of the things you did. And after 6 years, and I went in right before September 11th happened, right before the war. So my entire career, I joined the military in January 2001, and then 9/11 happened in September of that same year, and the world absolutely changed.
Yeah.
So my entire career was war and conflict and deployments and. And after 6-7 years, it was exhausting. So I started to shift to, okay, what am I going to do after this? I had already signed a second, because my first contract was 6 years. Then I signed a 4-year contract my second time. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do next? Because this isn't what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I gradually made that shift out of the military after 10 years.
So 10 years, you know, you have a paycheck every month from the military. You got food every day from the mess hall.
Great food.
Air Force eats well.
Very well.
I've been to Air Force bases. You guys definitely dine better than the Army. Now, it's you have a place to live on base if you want, right? You're doing something interesting. You have training. All that goes away the second you separate.
Yes, it's done.
Now, did you jump right into being a travel journalist, or was there a transitionary period?
It was a good transition. It was about a 2-year transitionary period where I went back to university, studied government history in English. And while I was studying that, I started to observe the marginalization of minority communities. And I started to ask myself what helped me get out, so to speak, and kind of shift the way that I thought about the world. And it was travel. I was blessed. And the great thing about the military, and a lot of African Americans will tell you this, it's the jumping off point for travel for us. And I had an opportunity to live in Japan and Turkey and Germany and interact with people in different cultures that I never knew. I knew they existed, but I had no firsthand knowledge.
Yeah.
So it was, I wanted to share this with kids who grew up like me. And I started a small nonprofit foundation to teach kids about photography and travel. I've been a photographer since I was 13. Mm-hmm. So it was a big part of my life, even when I was a soldier. So one of the hardest parts about the foundation was we couldn't come up with money because there was a recession, as well as people did not believe minorities, African Americans, Latinos traveled the world, which at the time it was kind of true. It was, I would say it was something like 12% of African Americans had passports. And this is around 2010.
That's not a lot.
Yeah, it's not a lot at all. But you also have to remember most Americans didn't have passports until we needed them to go to Mexico and Canada.
Yeah.
It was something like 27%. Like Americans in general, we just didn't travel that much. And we still don't travel as much. And I started the foundation to just present the world.
Mm-hmm.
And people weren't supporting it. And I'm arrogant. I was like, I can do this. So I booked a one-way ticket to London and just hit the road. And this was when people have this idea that travel bloggers have been making money forever. In 2008, 9, 10, travel bloggers weren't making money. Like that didn't happen until around 2013, 2014-ish. Mm. So travel blogging was just a new thing. And I started a travel blog just because it was an easy way to kind of keep in touch with people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I started a travel blog, one-way ticket to London, and that was it.
That set you off on the course.
It set me on course.
And so you figured, hey, I'm going to lead by example. I'm going to show people how it's done.
Because you have to, because at the time, even today, there's not many African-Americans who do what I do for a living. You have a lot of African Americans who do travel and, you know, post on Instagram here and there. But I would say I can count on my hand how many of us are doing this professionally.
Deep in the game.
Deep in the game, yeah.
It's also – it's an industry that's very tough to break into traditionally.
Expensive to break into.
Expensive to break into, and there's a lot of risk.
Yeah, a lot of risk.
And if you're going to take the dive, you know, taking that much risk could be, you know, detrimental, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it doesn't work out, what do you do?
Exactly. You know? Well, Eric, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to dive into actually how you do what you do and how you maintain sort of a high output production with your creative side and your production side. Because I know you well, I know you're all over the place and you have a lot of systems. So I want to dive into that.
Okay.
Coming up after the break, Eric dives into his life as a travel journalist, the landscape of new media, and how he balances his creative desire with his need to produce content for clients and service the community that follows his work. You're listening to 89.9, The Business Station.
Bring forth Malaysia. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
We're back with Eric Prince. He's the founder of Minority Nomad. He's a full-time travel journalist, content creator, blogger, vlogger, all-around creative. Eric, thanks for being with us today.
Of course, of course.
So we were talking before about your transition into travel journalism and how you came out of the Air Force, you started a foundation, and you're like, I'm just going to lead by example and go do this. Bought a ticket and started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the time that you've been doing this, which has been 10 years plus,
right,
you know, you've developed a lot of systems and a lot of methodologies that you use. And I kind of want to dive into that because it must have been hard at first, sort of sourcing the work, finding the work, getting it done, putting it out to your clients.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you balance, like, how did you get that first job and how did you start to build your systems around the work?
Well, I think it was more so, it wasn't too difficult in the beginning only because I wasn't doing it for pay. So I'd say I didn't start getting paid until maybe a year and a half in.
Okay.
I didn't get my first like actual paid gig. I've been a photographer since I was 13.
Yeah.
So for me, selling an image wasn't work to me. It was normal.
Yeah.
So the entire time that I first started, I was selling my photography.
Okay.
And it would just, you know, a client, let's see, Facebook would reach out or Huffington Post would reach out or Random House Books would reach out and they say, hey, can we would like to purchase rights for this image. And that would be $600-$700 for a licensing fee. And that can last me a month.
Yeah.
You know, so
depends on where you are, right?
Depends on where I'm at, you know? So on top of the savings that I had and different sorts of income. So
now that market is diminished as well.
Oh, yeah.
The
it's
photography
ugly.
Market.
It's ugly. It's ugly these days.
600 down to six.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
I know. Well, the problem, well, we can talk about that later.
But
probably, you know, people are giving away their work now.
Yeah.
So they just don't understand the value anymore. But so in the beginning, I had an edge. I was doing it because I loved it. I created content because it was fun. Like I would do guides, I would do photo essays because it was what I enjoyed to do. So producing the content wasn't even an issue for me. And then all of a sudden people started to see it and started to notice and say, what's this black guy doing? That was the edge about being black.
Now,
being
in the different. U.S., someone says that, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, probably. But abroad, it's interesting. That's why I've made such a great career here in Asia. Because there's always a curiosity aspect to travel journalism, and how we see the world. And I found that the Asian market has really embraced us in a way that certain Europeans and North American markets just haven't, because we're there.
Yeah.
But here we're not. It's like, oh, I wonder what this black guy thinks of KL. I wonder what he thinks of Tokyo. I wonder what he thinks of our restaurant or our resort or our hotel. So they would reach out to me and say, we would love to bring you to our property for 2 days.
Yeah, and to that point, too, we met through another content creator, Jermaine.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Years ago. That's how you and I met. And around the conversation of traveling while black. Mm-hmm. And then through your content, I've seen over the years that we've been friends now, countless people say, wow, I never thought to go there.
Right.
Who were, you know, minority Americans, black Americans, Latino Americans say, wow, I didn't know that that place was black friendly or, and you're like, you just got to try. But then by the same token, if something's not, you say it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, don't go to Hungry.
Yeah. And it's rare. Like it's very rare that I'll say, tell people not to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I want us and, you know, it's interesting. I meet so many Malaysians who I'm the first African American they've met.
Wow.
Quite often. It happens to me all the time. And we have conversations and we exchange cultures. And even though they may hold some, you know, and I'm not just picking on Malaysians. It happens to me in Turkey and Romania, all around the world. Even though they may have some prejudicial views or some misconceptions about myself and my community, I have an opportunity to change their mind. And that's what's fun about what I do, fun about being a travel journalist in general, is that exchange of culture. So I'm blessed to have a lifestyle, a system in place that allows me to engage in these conversations.
But as well now, though, so like you said, a year and a half in, you got your first gig. And up to that point, you were living off photography, which is a very nice kind of cushion to have. But you're at the point now where you're constantly booking work.
Yes.
And one of the things that I found really interesting, about a year and a half ago, you and I were having lunch and you told me that you were packing your bags and you were leaving Asia.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, when you come back, you're like, I might not be for a year. And you literally packed a bag, subletted your place, got on a plane and left.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking to me and I want you to kind of explain what this looks like, because the rigors of this constant travel – working, you already had jobs booked out 6 months.
Yeah.
Speaking engagements, tours, all this stuff that you were doing for 6 months.
Yeah.
Nonstop. And I would see your updates like Bangkok to KL to Indonesia to Vietnam to London to Poland to US to back to London to France on a train for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage all of those, not just the travel in itself, like I can't even imagine managing that. But the bookings, the jobs, making the content, getting it to the client, and then also taking the time to be the creative person that they're paying you for.
Right, right.
Because they're not just paying like, hey, copyright for us 1,000 words on this hotel. No, they're like, Eric, speak to your audience. Give us your voice about this experience. And that's not just, you know, that's not drone work. That's creative work.
Well, I think it's easy for me because I'm always me. One of the biggest things I tell new creators, always be you. So many creators are fake. And I know this because I know them personally.
Yeah.
They're this character and they're creating a show. That's a whole nother level of, pressure for you because you have to remember who that character is.
All the time.
Yeah. You have to always shift and adjust and it's borderline lying. So.
And there's really little separation now between creating content, and it's kind of like old school kayfabe with wrestling.
Yes, yeah.
Where it's either
you're Ric Flair or you're the Nature Boy all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
You know, for me, and you know me. You see the content I produce. You see my vlogs. It's me.
All the time.
It's always me. I'm the same person on a podcast as I am in person, as I am as a speaker. That's made my life so much easier because I never even have to think about it. Usually when I book a client, they're booking me.
Yeah.
Literally me. Minority Nomad is Eric Prince. Or a speaking engagement, it's me, my voice.
Yeah, but they're booking you, but they're also booking you based on the quality and weight of the work you've created previously.
Right.
And that's the hard, like, I understand it's you, right? But I don't know, for me to get into a creative space, I still have a process to get there.
Yeah.
And I don't do it on the road 365 days straight. Yeah.
Well, I think, for example, I just did a project in Vietnam and Cambodia.
Yep.
And that job was with a tour company my job was to create a video every single day, then put together a highlight reel, as well as produce images of that project and two articles for them. Okay. And I was
Two articles per day?
No, not per day. For the overall trip. And for me, that was not a difficult campaign at all. Because it's something I literally would have done anyway.
Yeah.
Just on my own. My process is something that I've created outside of the work.
So what does that process look like though? Because you're on tour. I saw the videos from that project.
Yeah.
you were busy every day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So how do you go out every day? Mm-hmm. You're on boats, you're in temples, you're mm-hmm. eating street food, yeah. you're touring with this great woman, Donna.
Oh, yeah. Donna was amazing.
Yeah. And she's like, how old was she actually?
Donna was 63. She's sick. Well, she is 63.
From the U.S. or Canada?
From Boston.
From Boston. 63-year-old Bostonian. I mean, it was a very odd couple.
Yeah.
It was fantastic content, but. No, so you're in this kind of mix with this tour. You're doing stuff every single day on the agenda. You've got to be exhausted.
It was physically exhausting. The great thing about that, before I book a tour of that length, I look at the itinerary and I make it perfectly clear that I need personal time, space time. Because during the tour, I'm not actually creating anything.
Okay.
The only thing you're going to see from me on a tour is Instagram updates, six slides. And that's just, you know, we did this thing, the highlights for the day.
Yeah.
But the real work comes after the project. So that was a 12-day tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was off for a month after that. I took a month off to not only create content, but to rest physically, get my body back to where it is. Because I couldn't go to the gym over those 12 days.
Oh, so you didn't take a month off from work. You took a month off from travel.
I took a month off from travel. So after I came off the road, I was creating the content that they paid me for.
Nonstop.
I was editing the vlogs. I was editing the photos. I was writing the articles. And I was getting myself physically prepared for the next trip, which was right after that to southern India for 9 days. So the process is on assignment while you're there is creation. You're collecting the pebbles.
Yep.
After that, you put those pebbles into place. You take them and you move them. That's my process.
That's your workflow.
That's my workflow. My workflow starts at you're creating first. Yep. And the creative process is twofold. It's the creation and the edit.
Mm.
And the creation is what everybody sees. Like that's the creation is what people don't see. The edit is what everybody sees.
That final product.
That final product. So the creation, the first part, that's fun. There's nothing to that. I'll shoot hours of video every single day, but you only get to see from that day maybe 20, 30 minutes of that.
Yeah.
You know, so that takes time. Like people who actually try to like edit a vlog every single day, that's crazy to me.
Crazy talk.
That's crazy to me.
Now, also another part of any business is developing new clients, new clientele, and making new deals.
Right.
How do you work that into this schedule of traveling for 12 days, spending 30 days creating content, and then taking off for another 9 days to go create more content?
Well, it's all about pitching what you want to do. Yeah. Like I'm at a point where, for example, I'm going to Georgia and Azerbaijan after I leave Asia, and I'm already starting to pitch different companies, different hotels, restaurants, tours, and letting them know like, hey, I'm coming here. And this is what I'll be doing, or I'm interested in working with you on a content creation project or maybe a digital marketing. I also have a digital marketing company where I have employees who manage social media accounts. So I'll reach out to companies who have terrible social media accounts and say, this is what we can do for you. Mm. One of the biggest mistakes that I see a lot of creatives make is they come out the gate asking for something.
Mm.
Oh, my day rate is €350 a day. Like, well, that doesn't matter. What are you going to do for them? When you come at a client and you tell them what you can do for them, what you can create for them, how you can make them better or teach them or train them to be better, that's going to get you a lot more doors open. So that's what I do. I always present what I can do for them first. And once they say, oh, it would be great to work with you, that's when you say, okay, how are we going to monetize this and figure out a way to live?
It's like that in business, right? I can't sell you something if I'm not delivering, right?
Right,
so
of course.
I've got to, like, you always have to be delivering something and have value add.
Yeah, something new.
Yeah.
You always have to shift and adjust with the market. The market changes very quickly. And you know, we're on to the TikTok generation and people are still on Facebook, right? You know? So, I mean, if you're not creating dynamic new content and shifting, you're going to get left behind.
It's a scary time.
Yeah, so not for me.
So not for you, not for me either, luckily. Now, as we wrap up here, Eric, if you give just like one piece of advice to someone who maybe wants to get into a creative business, a creative field, maybe travel, maybe something else, but they want to develop processes and workflow and be able to have this high level output while still going through this entire process like you do and understanding it, what would be your advice and what would you tell someone who wants to go into a creative field as the, as an entrepreneur, as a businessman?
So I think the first thing I would tell someone is master your craft. Don't try to be a jack of all trades and do everything. I was blessed to pick up photography when I was 13. So that was a skill set that I had, but I had to learn how to write. I had to learn how to speak in front of a camera. I had to learn, for example, this podcast, I can't curse. And it's my natural flow to drop a lot of curse words. But I've learned how to, over time, speak to all as many different types of audiences as I can. By learning these skills, it makes me far more marketable, far more approachable, and gives me a lot more opportunities. I would say decide what you want to do and learn it. And actually learn it. And surround yourself with people who are doing the things that you want to do. If you want to be a writer, study writers. Read more. If you want to be a photographer, study photographers. A lot of people say, oh, well, I want to be a travel blogger. Well, most travel bloggers are a thing. They're a writer, they're a photographer, they're a videographer. They've learned and studied those specific aspects of their career and happen to be in a travel
They sport. Mastered that craft.
They mastered that craft. Or at the very least, they're trying. I would also say fail daily. Just fail. Constantly try and tweak and experiment with your craft no matter what.
Because if you're not failing, you're not pushing yourself.
You're not progressing. You're not changing. You know, it's just like working out. Any skill is working out. You know, one day you might be able to do 12 reps. So the next day you should try to do 13, you know, and through failure, you have growth.
Make those gains.
Make those gains.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you taking the time.
Of course, brother. Thank you.
You've been listening to Beyond Performance on BFM. In this episode, we spoke with Eric Prince, a travel journalist and the creative entrepreneur behind Minority Nomad. We dove into how he made the transition from being in the U.S. Air Force to being a full-time travel journalist, and the methods and routines he uses to balance his creative process and still being able to produce content for his clients. If you missed any of this conversation, you can find it on our website, bfm.my, our BFM app, and of course, on Spotify. You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You've been listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.